time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, this is Lee Bockham. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you learn to thrive no matter what life throws your way. Now, today, before I begin, I need to read something that was given to me by my attorneys, and so I want to read that now. This is a disclaimer, and this disclaimer says, what I'm about to say should not be construed as medical advice. Before making any changes, you should consult your doctor. This material is my opinion based in research and experience. It may or may not apply to you. You need to assess my statements. Do not accept what I say as fact. Research what I say. Now, the reason I say that is because today I'm stepping into a bit more dangerous area. And the reason is because today I want to talk about depression. In fact, for the next few weeks, I want to talk about depression, not just depression, though, but some of the misinformation out there about depression and some effective ways of dealing with depression. Now, notice that I've never had this as the you should always be happy kind of podcast. That's not ever been my goal. Otherwise, it would be happyology instead of thriveology. My belief is that the task is thriving no matter what life has coming your way and thriving no matter what's going on in your life, whether it's an illness or something else you're struggling with. And one of the things that I hear repeatedly is, well, what about depression? So today I want to talk some about the truths and myths of depression. And so this is audio one in my Dealing with Depression series, Truths and Myths About Depression. Before I begin, let me just say kind of where my experience comes from. First, let me tell you, I make no money off of my opinions about depression as opposed to the pharmaceutical company and lots of other companies. I'm not selling a course. I'm not giving therapy at this point. I'm not doing anything other than providing my experience. The second thing is, because of that, it's a fairly non-biased opinion. What I'm looking for is what's effective. That has always been my root thing, is what's effective, what works, what makes people thrive, what helps get people better. I'm not caught up in trying to prove a point other than to say, this might be helpful for you. So if you find it to be helpful, that's great. If you find it to be alarming or harmful, please disregard it. My experience comes from spending years as a therapist, of having dealt with lots of people who suffer from depression, but also being very open-minded to the possibility that the model at hand is not working. In fact, I would promise you that the model at hand is not working. That's what I always relied on, is this effective? Is it working? Is it not? And so we arrive at this kind of level of knowledge based on the fact that what I really want to provide is a way for you or a loved one to find a way through the depression in the most effective way possible. If it was medication, I promise you I would be standing behind it. But as you're going to learn in just a few minutes, that's not it. And then we're going to talk some about what it is, but just recognize that as much as possible, I'm a very unbiased person who only wants to find a most effective way of getting to a life of thriving and one where there's minimal impact from depression. So let me say right off the bat that I certainly do believe that depression exists. I'm not one of those that believes that depression is just a figment of your imagination or is somehow some representation of how we've created this category. I really don't believe it's just something that we've made up. I do believe, however, that there are lots of difficulties with the depression diagnosis, and I want to talk some about why I believe that. First of all, recognize that we can't, unlike a broken bone or some virus that's causing an infection, we can't point to anything and say, see, there is, that's the depression. You can see it right on that scan. You can see it right in this test. We don't have that. And my guess is we're never going to have that. I may be wrong about that, but I don't think we're going to ever get to that because I don't really believe that we're really talking about a structural issue. And so that's where I want to kind of talk about these myths. First, I do want to say that I do believe depression exists, but I also want to talk about the fact that depression comes in many different levels, many different forms, and many different types. This is kind of the truth about depression. There are different levels of depression, meaning that there is such a thing as a low level of depression, just kind of a low depression, a moderate depression, a severe depression, and what we consider to be a very severe depression. Now, when we are looking at that role, we're really looking at the depth of the symptoms. So someone who has kind of a low depression may just kind of have a negative outlook and really have some difficulties in moving through the day. Someone with severe depression may find themselves in bed unable to get up, unwilling, unable to engage in the world. And so we also find that there are two different types of depression, at least in my watching, and that's situational and global. And the global is somebody who just, no matter what's going on in life, it's kind of the Eeyore of personality. You know, that no matter where they are in life, they're just waiting for the bad thing to happen. Part of that you might classify as pessimism, but I'm going a little deeper than that. Sometimes pessimism is just looking for something bad to happen. This is a bad feeling, low energy, unable to engage in the world, and it exists over time. Versus situational, where somebody might suffer some depression after losing a job, or having something not happen that they wanted to in life. Maybe they didn't get into the college they wanted to get into, or, you know, a sports career ends because of an injury. And so that's kind of situational. And by the way, that situational piece has parts of it being in grief. And so one of the places that we can kind of look for that is this about something that's happened, or is this kind of an overall attitude or feeling? Now, there is some bleed over here, you know, that sometimes we just can look at the situational thing and say, well, that's really grief. Well, it's not that simple. Sometimes we move beyond grief and still there's something there. There's still something that's got somebody stuck. Maybe it's created some thought patterns and some other pieces to that. Okay, so then there is another kind of truth about depression, and that's about the broken brain issue. Now, I want to talk about this because sometimes depression shows up in what I consider to be truly broken brain. I mean, there's something that is wrong in the wiring, wrong in the function of the brain. And when I talk about those, I'm really talking about some things like obsessive compulsive disorder or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, the ones that we really see as being kind of the severe mental illnesses. Now, see, what complicates all this is that a lot of times depression is part of that. It certainly is in bipolar. If you're not familiar with bipolar, you may know it by the old name of manic depressive, which means that there are manic phases where there's lots more energy than should be, and depressive phases when there is a lot less energy than there should be, and the person vacillates in between them and goes back and forth. And we're pretty much convinced that is at least partly a chemical piece and at least partly a wiring piece. Schizophrenia tends to be probably much more of a wiring piece to the brain. And so I want to set those things aside. And also OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, I also want to set to the side and all the underlying pieces of that, like Tourette's and other syndromes. And I want to really focus only on kind of the common, ordinary, everyday depression. Now, depression can come with another buddy, anxiety, right? Sometimes depression and anxiety come hand in hand. So when we look at this, that's what kind of makes it confusing. Sometimes we go, oh, it's just one of those mental illnesses. Well, I'm not convinced of that. I do think that there are times when the brain is malfunctioning, it's misfiring, and those are the kind of the big broken brain pieces that I think of. And there are some very clear treatment options, chemically treatment options for bipolar, for schizophrenia, and even for OCD that are not quite so true with depression, which is why I believe that there's such a difference. We also can see a difference in the brain scan. When we scan the brains of those that are suffering those mental illnesses, we can actually see the parts of the brain that are overfunctioning and the other parts of the brain that are underfunctioning. That's not true with depression. Now, we can tell when somebody is in an upbeat mood or downbeat mood by those scans, but that's different than saying, oh, see, that's pointing to the places of depression. So we also know that depression does come as kind of a freestanding element. Some people just kind of suffer from depression, and other people have freestanding, but others have it with that close ally anxiety. You know, it kind of makes sense that if you're down and kind of sad and upset about things that have happened, which is often one of the elements of depression, that you might also be anxious and worried about what's coming, the elements of anxiety. And so they kind of come hand in hand. Now, there's one other truth about depression that I want to name here, and that is that depression and grief can look very similar. A lot of times people think that there is that somebody in their family is suffering from depression, and they're really suffering from grief. Maybe they lost a spouse or a dog or a child or a friend or a parent, and they go into a funk. You know, it's a good way to kind of think of it as into a funk, and that funk can last. Now, it's possible that the depression takes over, that the grief transforms into depression. But the real truth is that grief looks like depression for a while. At some points, the sadness of it, the loss of it, can really look like depression. So one of the ways that we can kind of get our hands around this is that grief is about a loss. You can point to something. You can point to a piece of the puzzle and say, oh, you know what? All this kind of fell together when they lost this, when they lost a job, lost a spouse, when they lost a child, lost a parent, lost something significant. Maybe lost their health. Maybe there was an accident. They lost use of a body part. All of those pieces are tied to grief. You can point to something and say it's a situational piece tied to that. Depression, it's much harder to find that there's a root cause. It's just that there's an overall feeling of sadness and being down and low energy and inability to make decisions and all the other pieces. Now, as I talk about that, you notice that there are some different symptoms that people show for depression. We know that for men, for instance, agitation, frustration, and anger is often a symptom of depression. With women, it's often about sadness and low energy. So there are different ways that it might express itself based on gender, and that kind of gives us kind of the framework to understand depression. So here are some myths about depression, and these are very important myths. One myth is that it is easily treatable with medicine. And I say that because now I've probably done a tap dance on some toes, and I recognize that I'm probably going to get some email from people saying, well, my antidepressant worked for me. I'm not saying that antidepressants don't work. I'm saying they're not particularly effective. If you look at the research, and there are links in the show notes, if you look at the evidence, it doesn't support very well. So how do we choose? How do we kind of decide whether a medicine is useful or not? It's very simple. The first step is to ask, is it as useful as the placebo? In other words, does it give as much effect as a sugar pill? That's kind of the piece that we have to fit in there. The next piece is it dangerous? Not does it have side effects, but is it dangerous? And so antidepressants have lots of side effects, but they've been proven to be very close in their effectiveness from just a placebo, just a simple sugar pill. Now, a lot of people who have been prescribed antidepressants have bought into this idea of how many people it helps. And so here's a little more evidence. One is that when they set up the tests for the people who are going to have this tried on, they eliminate a lot of people who don't fall in their parameters. In fact, what they tend to look for in order to test an antidepressant is people who are suffering from mild depression. So I'll tell you a little secret. People who are suffering from mild depression often find relief from the depression within about a 3-month period. By the way, you'll notice that most antidepressants have a three-month window in which they're looking to see if it's effective. That's not an accident, because it will resolve itself naturally. Depression will resolve itself naturally in mild depression, usually in about 3 months. So what they're basically doing is they're doing a test on people who are probably going to resolve anyway, and they find that it's only slightly more significantly effective than a placebo, only slightly more. And so if you look at the evidence, 3 out of 4 people were eliminated from some of the drug tests, only to find that the 75% effectiveness that they showed was exactly the same effectiveness that they showed for placebo. And so in the general population, we find that the efficacy, the usefulness of it, is about the same as a placebo. And this has been shown in study after study. Now, the pharmaceutical companies only have to show that it's as good as a sugar pill. That's it. That's the level of effectiveness that has to be shown. So that means that somebody who is taking an antidepressant could likely get a very similar result being on sugar pills. In other words, those pills don't work. So why is it that we've ended up in this belief that antidepressants are the way through this? Well, it's because of the chemical imbalance theory about depression, which, by the way, doesn't hold much water when they test it. You've probably heard about the serotonin levels. In fact, most of the antidepressants are related to serotonin levels. It either has the body create more serotonin or keeps the serotonin that's already there from being used. Those are the two types of antidepressants. And the belief was, and still is in the general population, that if you raise the serotonin levels, that it will relieve the depression. Here's the problem. We can show no correlation between serotonin levels and depression. More than that, it's very difficult to even test the serotonin levels. You have to look at the byproducts, the breakdown of the serotonin in the body to even establish what it is. But what we know is that there are people with much higher levels of serotonin than normal who suffer from depression. And there are people with much lower levels of serotonin in their brain that suffer no depression. There is no correlation. Not only that, but we know that the drugs that we know immediately increase serotonin levels, like amphetamines and cocaine, do not relieve depression. So in other words, what we have determined is that while chemical imbalance is our kind of flippant theory of the day, it doesn't hold water long term. It's just gotten into our culture so much that it's hard to get to the bottom of that. There is a link to an article that will tell you more about that and show you more evidence of that. But let me just say now that the whole idea of a chemical imbalance in the brain, especially around serotonin, has been disproven as the root cause of depression. Okay, there's also this idea that the patient plays no role in depression. You know, that's kind of it's not their fault they're depressed. And I don't believe that for anything. You know, for me, this is a whole lot like lots of other issues like high blood pressure or like diabetes, that there is some issue that is related to lifestyle and to the patient themselves. And the nice thing about that is instead of blaming the patient, it means there's something they can do rather than just pop a pill, which we've already established isn't particularly effective. What I think we've done in our culture by saying they can't help it, it's just this organic issue, is that we've removed the possibility for anybody to do anything about their depression. You just have to kind of be stuck in it. And I don't believe the evidence, and this is also research evidence, supports that. There are lots of lifestyle shifts that can happen that can help depression, but only if the person doesn't constantly rely on the fact that it's not their fault. Okay, another myth is that it's totally organic, meaning that it's just in the kind of the brain structure. What we know is when we're talking about this, we're talking about not just the brain, but the thoughts, the mind. And it's a combination of the two. You know, a lot of people said, well, you don't think it's chemical? I absolutely believe it's chemical, just like I believe that every single thought you have, a good thought, a bad thought, is chemical. There is a chemical reaction in your brain every time you have a thought, experience anything, have a mood, taste something, experience anything in life, and there is a chemical reaction in your body. You are one great big chemical petri dish, having chemical reactions in your body constantly. That's what keeps you going. That's what keeps your thoughts going. That's what regulates everything. The fact is, though, that it's not just organic, meaning the brain's not creating the negative thoughts. The mind creates negative thoughts that creates those cascades in the brain. It is not entirely organic, nor is it totally thoughts. There comes a point when the reset in the brain gets degraded over and over, and eventually it's very difficult to get out of the negative thought process. So here's the real thing about the truth of it is it's neither chicken nor egg. It's both chicken and egg. It's both residing in the chemicals of the brain and residing in the thoughts of the mind. It's a combination of the two. What we do not know is what starts it. The good news is we know some things that help. Okay, so this week I really wanted to just zero in on some truths and myths about depression and be very clear. I believe that there is depression. I just don't believe that we're going to discover that it was serotonin, and I also do not believe in the efficacy of antidepressants. Well, I say that that you'll get as good a result or maybe a slightly bit better result than you would with a sugar pill. But that's not particularly great when there are some things that have been shown to be much more effective than that sugar pill. And those are some of the pieces that we're going to talk about next week as we talk about what do you do about your depression. Okay, this is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you continue to work to thrive in your life. And if this is helpful for you, if you go, you know what, this opened up my eyes to something and you know somebody who would benefit, please get this in their hands. Help spread it so that other people can say, hey, you know what, maybe there's something I can do. Maybe it's not just this pill that I have to take. Maybe there's something that works better. Maybe there's a way to get out of this depression a lot easier and a lot more effectively than what I've been led to believe so far. Again, Lee Balcom, wishing you the best in a thriving life.
You've been listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.